You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 362. We got a special guest. We're going to be talking about records. It's going to be a grand old time. Welcome back to Punk News Podcast, episode 362. First of all, we're here with, I guess, one of the regular crews, as you could say, someone that's been here on here more and more. This is Features Editor John Gentile. But we're also here with the other Chiefy Weefy, the other main man. We are here with Managing Editor Adam White. Adam White, are you ready to talk about shows? Are you ready to talk about records? And are you ready to talk about the usual bullshit that we talk about?
I am certainly ready for the bullshit.
I don't know about the other stuff. Yeah. And we are also here with reviews writer, news editor, well, actually I guess more news editor than reviews writer, but podcast host as well, Sam Barrett, all the way up there in Brooklyn. Sam Barrett, what's happening?
Nothing. It's Brooklyn. It's raining.
Sam Barrett complaining
about... You say that as if you aren't living in like one of the most like probably like populous cities in the world that has stuff to do.
Including like, some of the best record stores in the world, which we're talking about on tonight's podcast, because we are here with Christian Sorge. Christian, how are you doing?
I am lovely. How are you guys? And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, the reason we got Christian on is because he just opened a brand new record store up in Brooklyn. It's called New York.
It's in Manhattan, actually. I'm going the other way. I'm in the East Village.
221 East 10th Street, I see. And the only reason we got Christian on is because he opened up a cool new record store, and it's called Limited to One. And the special thing about it, if you will, is it's mostly very rare and limited run records. Is that correct, Christian?
That is correct. We are trying to handle and stock mostly contemporary, limited, and out of press and collectible vinyl, focusing mostly on punk rock, metal, indie rock, emo, hardcore, pretty much everything across the board.
So I guess what was the impetus for this? Record stores are popping up right now. What was the impetus to have a record store with this concept behind it as opposed to just another, you know, swap shop, if you will?
It was a few different reasons. One of the reasons is I've been a collector for a long time. I also do a podcast called Record Nerds with four other friends of mine. We spend a lot of time just talking about record shopping and what we're looking for. And I came up with an idea that I thought, I was just surprised that there wasn't a record store that sort of handled collectibles in the way that I wanted to. I had a few different ideas on what I could do. And I just got together with my friends and talked about like what would make our experience more fun record shopping. You know, I love all the shops in New York and we go all the time. And I also like shopping online. But I just wanted to, you know that feeling you get when you walk into a store and you see like one great record on the wall. I wanted to make a shop that was like all the records on the wall were shit that we would go crazy for. You know, we wanted to focus on, you know, we're all music lovers first. And, I also wanted to try to do something reasonable. You know, I've been to a few shops that incorporate some of those ideas into their shops. And I love those shops. But I just thought, what if I made a pretty small shop, something tiny? Our space is only about 300 or 400 square feet. We only have about 10 bins of records plus about 40 or 50 wall records. So we're only at one time only have about, 800 to 1200 records in the shop at any time. And I just wanted it to be, you know, a shop that focused on the music that me and my friends loved.
So being that, especially in New York, because I'm, you know, from New York, a lot of record shops have been, like, long-standing record shops have been disappearing lately.
Sure.
I guess, like, how have you guys, I know you guys had your opening last weekend. How have you guys been received so far?
I mean, to be honest with you, we had a lot of sort of blowback online a little bit before people came to the shop. And a lot of them just, it was a lot about speculation about pricing and what we were going to do and how we were going to last. And then since then, every person who's come in the shop has said to me, you know, this is the best record store I've been to in a long time, or it's so funny you've made a record shop that's exactly my taste. The reception has been amazing. We feel like that if we can keep this going, you know, it's going to be a really successful run for us. I've had a lot of people come in and say, listen, I'd rather bring you guys my records than, you know, go to another shop and not get good money for it, or like them not care about the rarity of it, or, you know, they'll look at a 45 and they'll just go like, oh, you know, who cares about it. And then the other thing is we wanted to make a shop that's like fun and communal. We wanted people to come in and sit down and listen to records and talk about it. You know, yesterday we had 5 people in there and they were all like kind of like aging punk rock guys. And we were just sat around and talked about seeing Quicksand 10, 15 years ago, or going to Brownies and seeing, you know, Jimmy World, or, you know, just like chatting it up about all these old shows that we had gone to, you know, and sort of reliving our, you know, our early 20s or whatever. And that was exciting to do. And I think when even the younger crowd who came in, the people who are still able to go back and find some of the stuff they've never seen on vinyl and just have it like focused on that, I don't want to say a scene, but, you know, that music that existed to us. And while also supporting the new music that's coming out, you know, bands that we love and different labels that we love, and supporting them in certain ways.
Christian, did you have to sacrifice your own collection to get started, or how is that what happened? And was that tough?
No. I mean, I tell people I only gave about 5% of my collection. I mean, I have about probably 7,000 to 8,000 or 9,000 records in my collection. And I probably gave up about 5%, but I knew that I wanted to open up the shop. So for the last 6 to 8 months, I've been buying collections and going and traveling quite a bit and trying to curate. I know that sounds like pretentious, but I've been just trying to curate a shop that focused on my taste and my friend's taste and stuff that we think that, you know, everyone would like to see in a shop. You know, we had crazy, like the Jawbreaker live record that's limited to 200. We had that on the day opening. We had a few like crazy brand new records. We just had a lot of stuff that people haven't seen in person. And we're able to bring that. We had the original Seisha LP up on the wall. We've had a few like really rare things that people got to come in and take a look at. Even if they, you know, even if that stuff's too expensive, we still have like a ton of like limited press hardcore for like $5-$10 that people were able to come in and buy. We had we're still pricing 45s at the moment, but a lot of them are really super reasonable, you know, $3 to $10 or something. And a lot of these people haven't even seen it, or they're going back and they're buying the records that they once had that they sold for whatever reason. So I only gave a little bit of my collection to be there, but I occasionally I'll probably pepper in some of my own collection here and there just to get rid of some records for more room for more records for me.
What's the baddest record in your personal collection, and what's the baddest record you've got at the shop right now?
In my collection, I mean, I have 5 Fugazi test pressings.
Oh, damn. Wow. How'd you get those? Do you like write that directly? Or?
No, not at all. I got one as a gift from someone. I don't know how they got it. And then I recently bought 4 off of someone who's had it for a few years. And I found one on eBay, actually, for song number 1. I found that for pretty cheap once. I think I paid $60 for it or something like that. And we had one of those in the shop on the day we opened, and that sold almost immediately. We have that brand new 7-inch, the Jesus picture disc. That thing is still on the wall. I know kids are kind of going crazy over that. I have the first Explosions in the Sky LP, the one that's limited to 300 copies, which is now like almost $1,000 record somehow. I don't know how, but it is. And I collect test pressings. I try to get the most rare versions. I have, I'm trying to think some of the other really good things that I have. Oh, I have, I don't know if you guys know about this, but there was a shellac record that was never released, but was only given to their friends. And on it has a list of all their friends. And it's like Nirvana's on there, everyone but Kurt, because it was after he died. And it's like Will Oldham on it. It's got like, you know, all these famous people on this list. And I somehow got a copy of that LP.
So
that was first.
So you mentioned that you traveled like pretty much everywhere to source all of these records that you have. Where in this world is the best place to crate dig for a change like this?
Well, I did go to Holland for the Utrecht Record Fair. It's like the world's largest record fair in Holland, and that happens twice a year. So I went there in April right before Record Store Day, and that was pretty fun. I went to Asia. We went to Tokyo and outside of Tokyo. And I mean, Japan is probably the best place I've ever been for record shopping. It's pretty much hit after hit over there. The trick is getting it all back and finding the right stores. There's a lot of stuff that's hidden there. A lot of really like amazing tiny stores that you would never know would have great records. We went into a kids record store and found like an original Empire Strikes Back LP with the OB strip. And I found like a Damned record, original pressing with OB strips. And I mean, Japan's super fun to record shop in.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's super fun. And the thing is, the one cool thing about Japan is like, the records that you've never seen, you know, like I remember walking into like one of the shops there and the first bin I went to, I pulled out like an original Mineral Power of Failing and then an original Dear You on Blue Marble by Jawbreaker. Like this is all within 5 minutes of walking into the first shop in Japan. And I was like, oh man, I just like take my wallet and all my money right now. It's over.
Kristen, give it to us straight here. We were arguing about this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Is it poor form to whip out your cell phone and look at Discogs and compare it to the price of the record in the store? Is that poor form? Is that rude?
No, here's the thing. I think that some record owners may believe that that's true, but we are the exact opposite. We in the shop, we've put our Wi-Fi up. We welcome people to check Discogs because we are trying to be as reasonable as possible. And I think that's where that's the difference also, is because I want to be as transparent as possible. I'm not trying to flip records. I'm not trying to like make the most from records, you know? So I want people to come in. I want them to check their Discogs page. I want to make sure they get the right pressing, but I also want them to see that I'm charging the least. Like when I was pricing everything, my question to my friends were, when we all got together, we had a pricing party, and I said, listen, can they get this version cheaper? And I want the answer to be no, always. So with shipping, like if something's $23, I mean, the most I would charge is $25, $26 for it. You know, that's it. I want people to check. I want people to know that I'm not trying to rip them off. It's for the love of the hobby. And I do it everywhere I go. I don't always check prices, but I check Discogs to make sure I don't buy a second and a third copy for myself. Mostly that's why I do it.
You see, I feel bad about it because I feel like I'm saying to the owner, like, oh, I don't trust you, or you're trying to pull. So I'll do it though, but I'll like do it around the corner, like kind of.
Yeah. We had a running joke that all record stores have like a Wi-Fi dead zone in them, so you can't check Discogs. So it's like you walk into and it's like a cinder block. You literally walk in and you can't check the Wi-Fi. But we honestly, we welcome people to check. We want people to come in. And truth be told is if something is overpriced or if it's priced wrong, I feel very comfortable with talking to someone and saying like, listen, if you think it's overpriced, let's talk about it. I'm sure I can help out. Or, you know, I don't want anyone walking out of the shop feeling like I'm taking advantage of them. I want that to be a space where everybody can come and hang out and talk about music and buy great records, you know?
That is awesome. And I love everything about that. I think we're going to wrap up talking about lovely rare collectibles. Thank you for coming on. It's of course. Amazing.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And I look forward to having all of you guys stop by the shop. We're going to try to do some collaborations with some labels. I want to say one thing before I go. We did Little Elephant Lathes. We did one of a kind lathes with them with special covers, and each pressing we did was limited to one, just like the shop. And we still have a few of them now, and there's all current bands, and we're selling them for pretty cheap. So if you guys want to come in and check those out too, we did a collaboration with them and it came out really well.
Oh, Chris,
yes.
The name of the shop is, I'm sorry. The name of the shop is One Out of One.
And yeah. Well, it's called Limited to One.
Limited to One.
Yeah. But One Over One, that's like when people handwrite the numbering, it's like One Out of One. Limited to One.
What's the website?
It is limitedtooneshop.com. Is that correct? I have my fact checker sitting in front of me.
and what's the address in Manhattan so people can find it?
It is 221 East 10th, and that's between 1st and 2nd Avenue.
Nice.
And one last thing, Christian, can you plug your podcast here? So because I'm sure it's something that our listeners would want to go check out.
It's a Record Nerds with a Z, and that's at soundcloud.com/recordnerdswithaZ. It's also our Instagram handle, and also our Instagram for the shop, and you guys can see what sort of stuff we've been posting. I mean, today we posted a Black Flag and a Jerome's Dream and a Lungfish. Our Instagram is limitedtoonenyc, so you guys can check that out there and say hello. And I'll be there all the time for the rest of my life.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course. Thank you guys so much for having me. I look forward to seeing you guys at the shop.
Thanks. Yeah, and nice talking to Christian, and best of luck to you. I hope it works out. I'm sure it will.
I hope so too. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers.
Take care. Bye.
And that was Christian Sorge. Of his new record shop, Limited to One, which honestly sounds pretty cool, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
I'm looking at his Black Flag record right now. He's got an NWA record, Black Flag. Oh, he's got Suburban Lawns. That's a great record. I'm going to have to go up there right now. Anyway, let's see. What do we got on the schedule for today's? We're going to play a song. Who's got a song to play?
I have a song?
Kick it off, Sam.
If you want to hear it.
We want
to
hear it.
Lately, I've been jamming out to Tiger Straw. They released an album earlier this year called Spin. So I am going to play Guardian for you.
We'll be right back.
and that was Tiger's Jaw doing Guardian. I saw Tiger's Jaw do a intimate set once at Studio 54, where they famously record down in, I think it was Norristown. Anyway, let's get this podcast kicked off and moving along. Let's see. Oh, Adam White. He saw a bunch of cool shows this weekend. Adam White, what were the cool shows you saw this weekend?
Oh, you actually talking to me interrupts me from buying this 7-inch on someone's website.
As well, seven-inch.
I will participate in our podcast. I will give the people that much. John, last week on the show, I sheepishly said at the end of the show or something like that, I'm like, oh, I have shows coming up that I might go to. But I purposefully didn't say anything about any of them because I am the worst person ever when it comes to going to things. And I voiced this online, and I actually had a big response from like a bunch of people that are my age, like a bunch of people that are like the former punk news people that are all trying to like live their lives now. A lot of them came back to me and were like, yep, that's fucking being an adult at this point. I like to say I'm going to a lot of shows, and I eagerly fill up a calendar with all of these things that I'm going to do. And then I'll like, you know, get home from a day of work and finally get the kids down to bed. And then I, you know, I look at the time and I'm like, I just want to die. I don't want to go to a show that, you know, that doesn't compute with my, you know, wishing to go crawl into a hole right now. But I got over that, John, and I went to 2 shows in 2 days, which is an amazing feat in my life. So, I want to talk about this because they're both pretty cool. And really, really, in a way, the kind of thing that I want to try to get out to more of around here. So Friday night last week, there was a show that, and this was a rare thing, and this is, I guess, what makes it kind of cool, is that there was a show that I only knew about because people were talking about it on Instagram, I guess, but it had no, you know, there was no event page. There was nowhere to go to buy tickets or anything like that. It wasn't a house show per se, but it was in a recording studio that's in Hamilton, Ontario. And there was no time for the show. The show was like dusk. We're going to play this show. It'll be at dusk. And I'm like, oh, man, I have to drive to this city. This doesn't necessarily help me. Like, what does everyone consider dusk to be today? And at one point, someone who's in one of the bands posted something like, yeah, it's in Boxcar Studio. If you need to know where that is, ask a punk. And I'm like, fuck. I'm like, can this be a little bit less vague in, for us who actually have to like show up as a tourist and not know where they're going. But, I managed to, like an adult, get in my car and drive for, you know, 30, 40 minutes to where I had to go and find where I had to go. It was a house show in that it wasn't at a bar. It was like a BYOB thing. It was a, you know, please don't wreck our establishment kind of thing, similarly to what you would want if someone was playing in your house. But the environment was pretty cool because it was like a proper sort of functioning studio and they were using the floor space in there. So 3 bands playing out of Hamilton, Ontario, a band from Welland called Big School that, I had not seen yet myself, but they're on the bill opening for a lot of the bigger sort of like punk and indie bands when they're coming into the area. They were cool. They had a little bit of a, you know, at their peak, there was sort of like a Marked Men vibe going on there. They were just like a fun, loud, 4-piece punk rock band. So, good stuff to come from them for sure. I don't know if I've heard them record anything as of yet, but they're fun. So Big School, you should go look them up. Then, a band out of Toronto that is, if you are into the Toronto kind of like punk and garage and noise scene, is a name band, but I don't know how much name recognition they have sort of outside of that area, particularly in the US. But it's a band called Teen Anger. And Teen Anger just released their 5th, I think, LP. And the 5th LP they put out is called Teenager, which I think is them trying to capitalize on the fact that every time anyone tries to Google Teen Anger, it autocorrects to Teenager. but this, their record that they had that had come out like a couple weeks ago I've listened to like multiple times daily since then. There is a really cool laid back vibe on here, and they've been a punk band for years that have gone all over the place genre wise. And this one is, I don't know if this means anything to anyone, but like, it struck me as like there's like a Sunday morning vibe to this record. It's just kind of cool and groovy, and it's not in a hurry to go anywhere, but yeah, it's really good. I'm going to play a song from it in a while. So anyways, so they played a ton of songs from that record. There was a band that has a ton of charisma when they're playing. You don't see a lot of like, I feel like I don't see a lot of young kind of punkish bands these days that have just a singer. Like that's not also playing guitar. And the frontman of Teen Anger is absolutely great at doing that kind of like, I'm going to be a bit of a weirdo punk singer thing, where he's stalking around the room and staring at people oddly and doing little dances and interacting with the other members of the band. And you don't get that when everyone is standing there with a guitar in their arms. And I don't feel like I see that from young bands that much. Not that Teen Anger is a young band by any means, but I don't feel like I see that in new bands that I'm going to see. So anyways, Teen Anger were great, and they were groovy, and they were fun. And it's just totally cementing that record that they released as being like one of my top things this year. The band that led, and all these bands were playing, by the way, because they were Teen Anger and the headlining band here are getting ready to head sort of across the country to the east coast of Canada to go play Sappy Fest, which is a festival that happens in Sackville, Nova Scotia in a few days at the end of this week. So they were kind of like, this was the kickoff of their little tour they were doing together. So the band that played was Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves, who I've seen once or twice before. Sweet Dave is the singer from a band called TV Freaks that people may have heard of. And he's put together I want to say there's a little bit of a cabaret aspect to what he's put together. Mm. John, it's very World Inferno-ish in the composition of this band, where he's got a whole ton of people. He's got a couple backup singers with him. Everyone's wearing suits and, you know, and proper stuff. And then he's getting up there, and his song and Dave's songs are all like just weird, gothy, at times incredibly abrasive, but very, very strange. Like there's some of the solo stuff from like the Damned members, it plays into some of that, right? Where it's too very theatrical in sort of what they're putting on. John, you would totally dig Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves.
I will check them out.
One of the things that was very fun about it is that Dave just put out a tape. So their first record was like, it was a cassette that they put out, and he played all the instrumentation on the tape when he recorded it. So he kind of put together this touring band after. So the touring band that he's put together has a bunch of people that you see from sort of other Southern Ontario bands in it. A guy named Nathan Berger, who's in TV Freaks. He was playing a keyboard and guitar for him, but a guy named Dave Nardi, who used to be the bass player in the Dirty Nil before he left the band, is touring around with Sweet Dave right now playing bass in it. And it totally cemented the fact that Dave Nardi is my favorite, he's my favorite person to see perform live music. There is something about watching that guy play that is just like muscular and amazing, and not from like a music, not from a virtuosity standpoint or anything like that. It's this, I'm talking strictly on like a cosmetic level. No one looks cooler sitting there playing like a loud, angry punk bass line than Dave Nardi. He just gives it more than I've seen most people play. He's not smiling at you. He's not goofing around. He's not, you know, he's never not on like 100%. He's like a fucking robot. It's amazing. So I love seeing Dave Nardi play, and I love seeing him play with the Dirty Nil, and he's, you know, doing what he's doing in this band as well. So yeah, so Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves was super cool. Teen Anger. Fuck. See, that's why they called the record that. Teen Anger was amazing. Big School was cool. So that was show number one. John, show number two. Show number two. My wife and I have a family barbecue at someone's 40th birthday. We're in Welland. We finish up there, bring our kids to my parents, drop my kids off, rush into St. Catharines so we can get onto the roof of the Niagara Artist Center, which is an art gallery in St. Catharines, Ontario, so that we can see playing on the roof to like the 30 or 40 of us that were on the roof, Mr. B.A. Johnston.
And,
I have heard this. I've read descriptions of B.A.'s live show, John, but to see B.A.'s live show is completely like you have to be there for this. His act, and it is an act, is incredibly well thought out. There's shtick, there's jokes. He's either playing, you know, acoustically on a guitar because he's not playing with anyone, or he's got a fucking Discman, like a little Sony Discman, which he's taken like one of like the pre-programmed beats from one of his like electronic songs, and he'll go and he'll plug that into the PA, and then he'll just run around with the mic and like perform the song to like the pre-recorded like the beats and things like that he's put together. And that sounds like maybe it's not that interesting because amazing, John. I almost don't want to like spoil for people the amount of insanity that's going on there, but he is getting in the face of like everyone that's in the crowd. He's like walking up to people, grabbing their beer, pouring their beer down their throat to finish it, crushing the can on his head, moving on to the next person, doing the same, getting on jumping off tables. He was pouring hot wax on himself. My wife at one point was like filming him as he was writhing around on the floor. And then he gets up and he takes my wife's phone and performs the rest of the song with my wife's phone in his hand pointed at him. And then he flips it around and starts recording my wife as he's playing the rest of this song, and my wife's like trying to cower away from the camera. And I mean, fuck, John, like he was doing the worm at one point, and I don't know if you've ever seen like P.A. Johnson, but he does not look like the kind of person that should physically be able to do that. It was crazy fun. It was so
that sounds
so
pretty good. Awesome, man.
The only downside that I can imagine, and this is like one of the most fun times I've had seeing a performance artist of any kind in a while, or like in recent memory, at least, the only thing that is maybe the downside of it is that like some of it is like, as if you went to see like a comedian, like it's stuff that you perfect and you work on as you go from show to show. So if you went to see BA tomorrow, it's quite possible that he's doing a lot of the same antics that he would have done that evening, because you know, there's props, there's like stuff that he's worked on as he's gotten to that point. So, I don't know if every audience is necessarily getting like a completely unique thing out of him, but God, it was so incredibly, entertaining that like you need to go see B.A. Johnston. If anyone here has not heard of this guy, he has I guess like a singer songwriter that has some songs that are kind of punky and some songs that are sort of like backed by like drum machine and keyboard, you know, recorded electronic stuff, and he sings basically about being like a skid. Like he sings about being like a lower class dirtbag. Most of his songs reference things that are like, and I can't put this in American context, but like there's always like the one chain of grocery stores that in your area is always like, is like the scummy grocery store,
yes,
like the lowest class one. The one that sells like, you know, garbage food for people that aren't going to go to a fucking Whole Foods or something, but is, you know, so he's singing about like, you know, buying shitty food at these crappy stores. He's singing about like the worst fast food chains that you can, that are in your area.
Arby's.
Sure. Whichever one is yours, right? Like he's embracing all of these, like, I'm going to be like a lower class loser that sits around watching like, you know, 80s movies, and it's so fun. So anyways, you should go see B.A. Johnston, you should go see Teen Angry, you should go see Sweet Dave and the Shallow Graves. This was a big deal. I went to two shows in 2 days. That doesn't normally happen.
I'm happy.
Oh, John, when is what's the next show I get to go to, John?
I guess in a week and a half, Adam, the Punk News Summer Soiree, which is rapidly approaching, with World Inferno Friendship Society, Posers, Crazing the Brains, pushing it to the limit. I'll be there. Adam White will be there. We will have goodie bags, and it will just be a grand old time. Tickets are sold out, so I'm sorry. If you don't have a ticket, you ain't getting in.
You know, John, I realized that, like, this to me is going to be, like, the closest to a tiny taste of, like, the touring band life that I'll get. In that I'm going to, like, get my car and drive for, like, 7 or 8 hours and get somewhere and be like, I not really know what's going on, and then kind of perform and then have to get my car and go, like, 7, 8 hours the other way. So I'm looking forward to being all messed up.
I'm hoping. I mean, listen, this is the first show what we do at Punk News is we just jump into the deep end with no idea what we're doing. And I hope it works out. I think it will. I just hope it's a really fun evening, and if it goes as planned, it will be a very special evening, and I'm extremely excited, and I'm trying to make it a memory that people will cherish forever. We'll see if we succeed or not, but even when we fail, we still win, because at least we tried. I hope that's how it works out.
Yay, trying!
So I at some point during the show, I'll come back and I'm going to play a Teen Anger song from their new record, but I don't need to do it now because I feel like we just played a song. So I don't know. You want to keep going?
Sure. I'll just go very briefly. Sam and I saw the Nightbirds. Nightbirds killed it. They say it's going to be their last show for about, well, not their last. This is their last set of shows for about maybe a year. They said a couple of them are having babies. They're not breaking up, but they're not going to be doing a whole lot for the next 6, 8, 12 months. Sam, I thought they kicked ass. What did you think?
That entire show was stacked, and it was amazing. So it was Nightbirds, Western Addiction, and this band that my husband's been addicted to, Dark Thoughts.
Great band.
Which is what?
Great band.
So good. They're Ramones-y, kind of like Mark Many, amazing, from Philly. Go, everyone should check them out. They're great.
Actually, if we're going to talk about Nightbirds for just a minute here, I want to plug something because I totally got the Nightbirds vibe out of this 7-inch, and I think people should go check it out. So there is a band from Vancouver, BC called Sore Points. They had a self-titled 7-inch that it may have been called I Don't Want To. Anyways, don't want to. It's a 7-inch that just came out on Hosehead Records. They're doing this, like, this fast, tough take on kind of like late 70s punk. And my main reference point when listening to them was I'm like, God, like, these guys sound like Nightbirds, but, like, without the surf guitar parts. So if you're a Nightbirds fan, like, go check out Sore Points. It's totally on point.
They have it. Speaking of something that's not on point, and we got a lot of stories, we're just going to blast through them today because we really do have a jam-packed episode. Sick of It All, they were hit by a drunk driver. Nobody was hurt, at least the band weren't hurt, but it seemed like it was a pretty nasty collision. It was head-on. Here's what they said. Last night, a drunk driver plowed into the side of our band wagon. We are all okay, aches and pains and bumps and bruises as far as we know for now. We don't know how the guy who hit us is, but he wasn't looking good when they pulled him out. We are feeling a little stiff, but we are still playing tonight at 8 o'clock at the Hard Rock Stage. Thank you so much to Bad Cop, and Valiant Thor for coming to pick us up so we can make the show, hauling our merch and sending it up. And I just say thanks and well wishes. Please do not drive drunk. And I think that's one thing we can all agree on. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to drink, then don't drive. And if you're going to drive, then don't drink.
Yeah, that's a scary thing. I mean, like, there's been bands that have, you know, not walked away from something like that. So that's, you know, good for the Sick of It All guys to come off. Did that screw up the rest of their tour? Did we, you know, do you just, like, go rent a van after that and keep going?
I'm sorry, Sam, go ahead.
Well, they're on Warped Tour right now, hence why Bad Cop went and picked them up. So I would assume that it's probably taken care of, you know?
Yeah, but also Sick of It All, I mean, they've been around the block. I mean, they've been around for 30 years. I think they're prepared, and they're a band of a certain stature that if they lose their van, they can get a new one pretty quickly within a day or two, you know?
I imagine people just come out of the woodwork just to like do favors for sick of it all. When I was a kid, before I knew anything about like the world of hardcore, and you know, I was like very nascent even in the punk rock. Like I knew a couple ska punk bands or something, and maybe that was it. There was this guy that used to drive around Niagara Falls in, I don't know, it was in like a fucking K car or like a mid 90s Honda Civic or something like that, that had the Sick of It All Dragon in like a giant sticker. It was, I don't know if it was a sticker, it was painted or something, like the whole back windshield of this shitty little sedan was the Sick of It All Dragon on the back of this guy's car. And it was like, it always stuck out to me, where I was just I'm like, I don't even know what that is. And, but this guy, like, I just appreciate his, just the fact that he's just going to own this dragon. Like that he's gonna like, you know what, whatever, I'm not driving a cool car, but my car is a big gnarly metal dragon on the back of it. So fuck you. And so that's I don't know, that's my like first Sick of It All memory ever.
I never understood how the Sick of It All dragon really like fit with the band. It never really seemed to.
It's so cool. That's how it fits.
You think so?
It's New York hardcore. It just makes sense.
To me, it's like, kind of like a cheesy frat boy tattoo. Honestly,
no, it's, you know, the coolest looking dragon. I think that like it. I'm going to give it to Sick of It All. Is like they get to own dragon. I mean, it's weird when you, I mean, I'll go look at like Sick of It All album art, and they're sort of all over the place as far as
imagery,
because like if you look at like, I don't know, like the cover or something like Yours Truly, I don't get what that is. It's a nice artwork painting, but to me it doesn't scream New York hardcore or anything like that at me. But then you look at like the Last Act of Defiance, like the new one that that came out, it's like a rattlesnake eating a rat on the cover of it, and I'm like, dude, like there you go, that's what you want if you're this kind of band. And then there's like the in-betweens where it's like, you know, vaguely, you know, German military stuff. And honestly, with that, but
album art 95 to 2005, I think that was the nadir of album art in general. You know, it's when, like when computers were still first starting taking over design wise, and the album's just like so cheesy from 95 to like 2005, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't that the thing?
It is all over the place. Anyways, though, Sick of It All, I'm glad that they did not get destroyed. I always feel like if I'm in an accident like that, and the other guy gets carted away, I almost wish that like the police would give me some sort of like here's a card with a number on it so you can find out what happened to the other guy once you've moved on. Because wouldn't you always want to know?
Yeah, there's different rules with regards to that, and honestly, the police don't even know how those rules work, and they just make it up when they don't know.
But no, there should be some sort of like, if you smash someone else's car, you forfeit your privacy and they get to pry on what's going on.
I agree. I think drunk driving is pretty bad, and I think people are kind of getting looser with it these days, and you really shouldn't do that, and it's very bad. Speaking of a guy that prevented something bad, Tom DeLonge. Everybody laughs at the poor guy. They say, oh, Tom DeLonge, he thinks there's aliens. Oh, Tom DeLonge, he's talking with the White House about Area 51. What a jokester. What a guy. However, Tom DeLonge used his mythical star powers to prevent and protect and stop a crime that was in progress or posting progress or that was just thwarted. Two guys were hanging around Tom DeLonge's neighborhood, and they tried to abduct the childhood friend of Tom DeLonge's daughter. So Tom DeLonge, did a social media post on his Facebook, which has over millions of followers, and he said, look out for these guys. They're trying to abduct little girls. And the guys came back to the town, and because Tom DeLonge posted that picture, everybody knew to look for them. They saw the guys, people, and then so the people called the police. The police came and locked up these guys, and I think you can directly attribute that to Tom DeLonge's social media post. Some people were saying, this is not news that some guy did a social media post. And people were like, who cares? This is just some stupid thing. But I'm kind of saying, I think Tom DeLonge used his powers for good. And even if he wasn't being selfless, whatever he did was was positive for the greater good, and then it got two alleged bad dudes off the street.
Can't argue with that. I mean, I don't know how anyone's going to fault him for.
But people were. They were like, this is not news. You know, Tom DeLonge is taking a soapbox. Hey, listen, if you're getting alleged child rapist off the street, I don't know how you can argue with that. You know what I mean?
A soapbox against what? Kidnapping?
A soapbox against Tom DeLonge's continual grandstanding. But listen, if him saying wacky alien abduction theories is the price to protect two little girls, I'm all for it. If every time Tom DeLonge told his wacky sci-fi theories, two people got saved, I would listen to every single one.
Well, I think, like, what he did was great. Like, there should be no kid out there that should not feel unsafe.
Oh, I think it was like gratitude to Tom DeLonge.
But I do think, like, reading his Facebook post, like, you know, it's how he wrote the statement does seem a little rambly.
Yeah, it is.
Like, you know, in his, like, you know, crazy alien abduction mindset or something, but... Like, you know, if you read past all of that, like, the meat and bones of it is valid and a good thing, you know? He did use his powers for good.
Do you think Tom DeLonge is losing his mind, or do you think he's just kind of a weird guy?
I think he's a little bit on the weird guy spectrum. Like, you know, if... Hey, just look at all of those naked Blink-182 music videos.
I feel that he's there was a time when he seemed I don't want to say unhinged, but kind of unhinged. But I feel that now he's kind of grown into his like weirdo celebrity, and he's really owning it. Like he's writing young adult novels about. You know, aliens. Sci-fi shit. He's emailing John Podesta. I think he's completely owning this this persona that he's created. And I don't know. He seems happy enough. I mean, all right. If we're gonna talk about Blink-182 for one second, I want to plug something else here. I'm just plugging other podcasts on ours here. I've not listened to any of these yet, but it is. Knowing the people involved is probably something amusing, so it might be something you want to check out. So there's a couple guys out of the Toronto area. One of them is Josiah Hughes. Josiah writes for Exclaim, the big Canadian monthly music paper that's up here. He's in the band Prenup as well. And there's a guy named Sam Sutherland. Sam played guitar in Junior Battles, if you remember that band. But he does a big YouTube video series called This Exists, and he actually wrote one of the really more prominent recent books about Canadian punk rock. He wrote a book called A Perfect Youth: The Birth of Canadian Punk. Anyways, Sam and Josiah have started a podcast called Blink 155. The concept being that Blink 182 have 155 songs, and they're gonna have a weekly podcast that is 155 episodes that talks about each and every one of them, one per episode. So if that sounds like a thing that you are into, they're only four in right now. So you can get on the trolley while it's still in the station here. So go look it up on iTunes or something. It's called Blink 155. Again, if that's your thing.
I'll just point out that Tom DeLonge is sort of a Jesus type character in that it's possible he knows that these wacky theories people laugh at him about, but it garners him some attention. And because he's got this additional attention through his wacky theories, he's got a wider reach of audience. And the wider reach enabled him to help people track down these two creeps, alleged creeps. So maybe Tom DeLonge knows that he's bearing the ridicule of humanity, but he knows that gives him a greater power to protect people by issuing notice to the police. So...
What if, like, Tom DeLonge ends up, like, being the one that blows the lid on this whole, like, Trump-Russia thing?
What if Tom DeLonge was right? Like, that's the head. Tom DeLonge was right all along.
That would be amazing. Oh, my God.
They're putting Trump into the back of a cop car, and he's just like, and I would have gotten away for it if it wasn't for Tom DeLonge. Shakes his fist. His little fist.
Who would be his pet animal? Would it be like, who would be like a Scooby Doo? What would that character be like?
Oh, like that? They'd be that that Blink-182 rabbit, right?
Well, listen.
It would have to be.
Speaking of resurrection, MTV is relaunching TRL, Total Request Live. I didn't
have a nice seg. That was a nice seg.
Thank you. You know, the Punk News podcast is like the four canonical gospels. You know, everyone's got their own perspective, but they all might be true. So listen.
Or none of them. Whatever.
Or none of them. TRL is being relaunched this fall on an hour-long program. I think during its height, it was 4 or 5 hours. TRL is where you can call and say, I want to see the latest video by Blink-182 or whatever. And they're bringing it back after a number of years of no music videos being on the MTV. I think almost a decade of no music videos on MTV. I didn't have cable growing up, so I never watched TRL. But if people were boohooing this, I thought TRL was kind of like a cultural influencer. And I definitely think like Green Day and Blink-182 and whatnot were on TRL. I'm sure they were.
Yeah, I also did not have cable when I was growing up, so I didn't watch TRL too much unless I was over someone's house and, you know, we were like ooing and eyeing at like the latest boy bands or something. But yes, I do think that TRL is an influencer in music. I did find like MTVU, like when I was in college, pretty like awesome, because they were actually playing like, you know, the punk bands that I was like into at the time. TRL, pretty much mainstream rock. The question, they would touch upon.
The question being is, in the age of YouTube where you can watch any video you want anytime, does TRL serve a purpose?
Hey, any press is good press, I guess, right? So if TRL is willing to put you know, mainstream like Taylor Swift stuff there, they're just gonna get press regardless. Yes, I would prefer just going on YouTube, because I'm pretty sure the music I listen to now will not be on TRL. But
I mean, there's something to be said about, we live in a world where music doesn't have the cultural, it's not the center pedestal in the you know, in the cultural building, let's say, as it once was. And TRL, in a way, even though it's not that old, like 98 was when it started, but it harkens back to a time when, you know, a single band or a single artist, like for good or bad, remember, like a lot of the stuff that they played was just like pop trash, right? But
yeah,
even so, you know, you would have these people that would become megastars, that would become like cultural touch points where you can go and you can say, you know, to say nothing of the artistry of it, but you could say, oh, like, do you remember, you know, where you were in your life when, you know, Britney Spears Baby One More Time was a hit, or when, you know, when Eminem broke with like the Real Slim Shady or whatever, right? Like,
Adam, are you on Wikipedia right now?
I'm looking at Wikipedia, and those are the top two in their final top 10. I'm just reading them off here because I wouldn't have been able to pick those out of my head.
I'm like, how did Adam know that?
But like, there was a time when before the media attention of like the youth became so fractured because of the internet, that you had these things that, you know, and even before TRL, you know, what was the name of MTV's big that big metal show that they had, the hair metal
Headbangers Ball, Headbangers Ball.
Right, where there was, or what was the other thing? 180 minutes?
120 minutes, wasn't it?
Minutes? 120 minutes? I don't know. I'm Canadian, so I don't fucking know about any of this. But, right? But, right. So, like, you know, they had that 120 minute show. Like, you hear people who grew up at like, certain eras, during certain eras in the 80s and 90s in the States, that will totally reference back to these particular MTV shows as being, you know, as being really big deals in exposing them to things. And there was a time when, you know, that could happen, where you could go and put together a television show on a major channel that for, you know, the music that they're trying to promote may not be the stuff that we'd normally talk about here, but it, the stuff that you're playing on there becomes like a major part of the ongoing cultural conversation. And like the YouTube, for all of like the choice that it gives you, like, I don't feel that it does that. I mean, like, I'm trying to think, like, what are the last few videos, like music videos, that became cultural, like known cultural moments, like that OK Go video with the treadmills. Like, they're all meme kind of things that do it, like that fucking what is it, that the South Korean guy,
Gangnam Style.
Yeah, right. Like things that blow up because they're kind of viral in the jokey internet sense, right? Those things are breaking. But you back in the MTV era would have had songs that sort of that broke also because of the music and not just because of the gimmick. And they would become, you know, things that people in all walks of life would be aware of. I mean, I wasn't into any of the shit that like TRL would have played, but I'm aware of it, right? But I don't know if I was a young person right now, if I would necessarily be aware of what the pop music of the day would have been, especially if I chose not to participate in it. So there, you know, it's, I don't know if they're gonna be able to achieve that by bringing it back, but I kind of feel that, you know, music is a powerful enough force that like you could have those kind of things for it. I don't know if I entirely buy the argument that like, oh, some of the kids are over here playing video games, so they don't care. And all the other kids are over here doing Twitch streaming. I don't know. People are playing video games or watching people play video games, and therefore no one's listening to popular music anymore. I don't know. It to a degree, the MTVs of the world kind of got off that boat, right? So it's not so much that like, oh, MTV can't make money by doing music stuff. It's like, well, they also decided that they can make more money by doing dumb reality stuff at the same time. So they didn't like fail out of trying to push music as a pop culture phenomenon. They also like opted out. So, you know, if they're going to go back there, I would probably not watch it, but it seems like a useful thing from a music being important to society kind of thing. So I'm cool with it that way.
Would you watch a punk rock one, Sam and Adam? Would you watch, like, let's say they had a punk, like on like a major channel or even like, you know, a more popular cable program, 120 minutes, people call up and say, oh, I want to see the new, you know, Integrity video, or I want to see the new Hot Water music video. Hot Water music video, and it's got people live in the studio hanging out, having fun, and kind of people just talking in the interviews here and there. Would you watch that?
I would DVR it at least, because like the other thing about I guess me and TV is I'm normally not home during the times that these things are happening, you know, so. But in order to stay current to, you know, what everyone likes or like what popular music sounds like, even in the punk sphere, you know, I would at least check it out. Another thing that I was thinking when Adam was talking was the fact that I feel like MTV has stepped back and they have been doing a lot of reality TV shows. I feel like they're trying to get back and kick back into the nostalgia type of things. Possibly, I'm not sure if the young people are the ones that they're trying to target with this.
How astute. True.
Yeah. Because, like, you know, the thing is, like, TRL was really, like, I guess our generation of people doing, like, you know, paying attention to it. And just looking at the trends of, like, what MTV has been doing, like, you know, they brought back, like, Beavis and Butthead and, like, Daria and things like that, not just for, like, a marathon. They're, like, on, like, weekly, you know? So, not sure what they're doing. I'm just very hopeful that hopefully they'll pick not someone like Carson Daly to do this.
I personally have no trust in like algorithms deciding what my next thing should be, what the next song that I should listen to should be. Making me sound older, because I think people do this, but the idea that like people go into YouTube and search for a song and then just like let it play whatever the next song
YouTube decides that
you should listen to is bananas to me. Like, that's crazy. I think that that's how young people operate. Young people, write us, podcast@punknews.org. Do you go and just go on YouTube and search for like a song you like and then just like let it go like it's the radio and play you other songs that some math that some dipshit computer programmer has written has decided is the next relevant song for you to hear? Like, is that a thing that you do? Because I'm amazed that people do that, because like algorithms, I don't care how many people Google has like hired to throw at this problem. Like, that seems so dumb to me. That seems so like you're going to get a bunch of garbage and things that aren't sequenced together because a human has looked at it and said like, you know what, you liked this song. Trust me. Like, you'll like this one. There's something cool that is like, you know, there's a vibe that this song that you were just listening to had in it, and I'm going to play something else for you that you may not have even chosen for yourself, but you know, I think they kind of fit together. Like the whole like DJ thing, right? Like this, the sequencing and curating, like you need a human to do that. Computer can do it by rolling the dice or by doing some heuristics on like, oh, well, people that liked this Bouncing Souls song also listened to other Bouncing Souls songs. So I guess if you're going to listen to one Bouncing Souls song, we'll play you more of them. But like, that's that seems like you're losing a whole part of the experience, because you're losing like the sense of expertise that you would get from having someone decide upon that. Right. So like from that standpoint, I would totally watch, you know, like a music video show thing that was playing music that I actually liked, that, you know, had song choices that were determined by people making, you know, a choice as a curator and an appreciator of music, and not based on either a computer or based on, you know, someone's commercial interests. That said, I'm an old person with two kids, so I don't watch fucking anything on TV. So I'm definitely not the target market for anything, let alone that.
Well, I'll tell you what, you are the target market for, Adam, playing a new song. Whoosh.
Oh wow, that was not as clever as your prior seg. So, anyways, I mentioned the teen anger album that just came out that was called Teenager. It was released on, I believe it would have been Telephone Explosion, which is the label out of Toronto that put it out. Let's see, yeah, sure, Telephone Explosion. Let's say that. So, it just came out. It's 13 songs. It is super fun and super groovy and super chill at times. There is this vibe that I'm hearing from a bunch of garage punky Canadian bands right now that are all seem to be influenced by a similar thing. And you hear it in the album that the Courtneys just released, their second record that everyone's really into. You can hear it on the new EP from Tough Age, and you can hear it on this Teen Anger record. And that is the influence of an indie pop label out of New Zealand called Flying Nun Records that used to be the heyday of Flying Nun Records is past. They're something that people, they're still a label, but they're a label that people have like a lot of like nostalgic love for a lot of the bands that were on there. And it's just kind of just like extended jam, indie pop, really just like bright guitar driven thing. And it shows up on all those records I just mentioned. It shows up on here. So anyways, this song is the second song off of the Teen Anger album called Teenager. It is called Dawn, and it's super cool. So here we go. This is Dawn.
Oh,
and that was Dawn by Teen Anger. Listen, we got a couple more stories. We're going to blast through them and wrap up tonight. First one, Holo Dio, he's on tour. Did we talk about this last week?
We didn't, but I saw that you put this in the show notes, and I said to myself, John, that's a Hard Times article. That's not something that is a real thing. And it's apparently a real thing. So, is it?
That joke never gets old. A real story is posted and someone says, is this Hard Time? That's almost like, can I get you anything else? How about $1 million?
No. I was not making a dumb joke. I literally thought that. This is the thing. So, well, yeah, we've talked about Holo Dio when it first happened.
We talked about Holo Dio when he was still flesh and bone.
It wasn't Holo Dio then. He was like Meat Dio.
Meat Dio. Well, anyway, he's going on a world tour. So basically, the surviving members of the Dio backing band will play live, while Holo Dio, which is a hologram of Dio, and pre-recorded live vocals will play. And it appears they're going to be charging like normal ticket prices for this. It's a world tour, and they're going to be playing like the size of stadiums, or not stadiums, the size venues that Dio would play, Meat Dio, as opposed to Holo Dio. And so... this raises a whole lot of ethical questions and a whole lot of questions as to what is a live performance and what are you actually paying for when you go to a concert? Holo Dio, is he a cruel blasphemy or is he the future of music? Or is he a gimmick?
I mean, if there's anyone that was going to be like resurrected as some sort of like ghost that is eternally chained to do the will of a company... it's kind of interesting that it's Dio.
I have no idea who this human is.
You know who Dio is?
What?
You don't know? Well, let's give the listeners a prime measure. Dio is a pretty important musician in regards to the realm of music. And actually, if listeners remember, 4 years ago, when we did that episode where there was like three different like child molestation accusations in bands, and we were all upset. We played Dio music in between each song because we were so upset. And the first song we played was Dio doing doo-wop. Dio, Ronnie James Dio, or real name Ronnie James Pandovalov, started out in the 50s doing doo-wop. Then he was in a couple of garage rock bands. Then in the early 70s, he was in a rock band called Elf. Then after he was in Elf, he was in Rainbow, which was a prog rock proto-metal band. Then he was in Black Sabbath. Then he was in Dio solo. So he's a very interesting character in that he traversed from doo-wop to rock to garage rock to prog rock to metal. That's a very impressive range of career, if you will. And so saying to Andrew, who is Dio? I guess he's most famous for being Black Sabbath's second singer, and also he had a very, very, very big career in metal in the 80s.
Got it.
Holy diver! You've been down too long in the midnight sea! Oh, what's coming over me? Holy diver!
It just got wacky up in here.
So Sam, would you go see like your favorite musician as a hologram?
No. I'll just live on to the memories.
I think I said this when we first talked about Hologram Dio, but I haven't actually seen any footage of this, so I'm not too sure how
it's creepy. It's creepy.
But okay, so maybe you can answer me. Is Dio normal sized?
You said when we first talked about Holo Dio, you're like, they should make him giant because
yeah, like if you have the technology to make like a realistic holographic person, and of all things, it's going to be Dio, then why not make him 50 feet tall? Just have him like just tower over the crowd and threaten.
he
his giant Dio metal horns that he'll throw are just going to like. They'll be like the size of a car. That's what I want.
He is regular size, which is about 5'2". As I said before, I'm against this. I understand that the Dio band needs some money and that Ronnie James Dio's widow needs some money, but I think those guys can make a decent living without having to do this. I don't like it because it's spending time and focus on nostalgia too much. You know, and it's not real. It is fake. It's ultimately empty. And honestly, I don't think people will continue to go and see Holo Dio. I think people will go once. You say, oh, that was fun. They won't be angry. They won't say that was bad. They'll say, oh, I had fun. But they won't go again. There's so many wonderful current bands out there. We don't need to cruelly dig people up from the dead and make them perform for us as zombies, you know, and have them do things maybe they wouldn't do, you know. So I'm against it. It's certainly sad that Dio's passed away. Dio was a fabulous musician. But I think when you try to fight fate like this, it just comes up as gruesome and honestly kind of terrified to, you know, if you look at it from a rudimentary penai perspective, the infinite void is waiting for us all, being scared of it by looking at holograms of people that have already been sucked into the void won't make you feel better. If anything, it'll make you feel worse. And if it makes you feel better, it's only because you're in self-denial. So I think this is ultimately hollow. I'm against it. I do think it's a gimmick. And there's so many other great bands that could use your money now that are alive. I say go see them. I would not go see this. If it was free, maybe I would go. If it was like $5, I might go as like a lark if my pals are going. But that's about it.
There's so much interesting stuff on Dio's Wikipedia page, John.
Dio's a fascinating person.
There is a statue of him in Bulgaria. You can go check out his tomb. His tomb, John. Not his grave. Not his coffin. His tomb.
Well, he's Dio. Dio was a great interviewer. And then, like if you ask Dio, like, oh, Dio, you know, your album from 1986. I love that album. He'd be like, oh, that one sucks. I hate that one. You know, like so many, so few artists really gave an honest, like, analysis of their own albums. Like, to be like, oh, you know, we worked really hard on that one. Or, oh, we had a lot of fun recording it. He'll be like, that one sucks. I hate that one. But it'll also, like, trash other people's, like, Dio, what do you think of Ozzy Osbourne? Oh, he's overrated. He's a hack. You know, like, Dio was great, man. He was kind of feisty, but he could back it up, you know?
And now he's a giant computer monster. So, well, not giant. He is a completely ungiant computer monster. He's a normal-sized computer monster.
He's a 5'2" computer monster.
Oh, that's even worse. He's a tiny little computer monster. Okay, so we have a couple more stories, but I think before we wrap things up here. So there was a Dave House video. Haas House. Goddamn. What is it?
Sam?
Haas.
Every time.
Haas.
I want to say Haas, but my brain says, no, it's you're wrong. It's fuck. I'm not making a joke. I seriously mentally blank on it every time I have to say it out loud. I actually like him a lot. Anyways, he's premiered a new music video for his song, The Flinch. You can find the track over at Punk News. It premiered at The Key. The track is off his 2017 release, Bury Me in Philly. His band, who he's touring with right now, which they build themselves as Dave House and the Mermaid. Dave Haas and the Mermaid. See, I just did it again. I did it again immediately, like 2 seconds after. Anyways, they're going to be heading on tour this fall with Beach Slang. So you can go check out the video over at Punk News, along with the tour dates, which look like they're kicking off in October at the very end of the month. And will run all the way into the start of December. Sam, you are a fan.
Yes.
What do you think?
I love this music video. As soon as I saw it, I was at, like, I saw the entire thing. I was, like, crying because it was so cute. Essentially, they have, not to give away anything, Dave's a family member is the boy that is in the music video, and it was just so perfectly laid out. I really miss the day where music videos had a great story and it was perfectly shot and all of that. So, yes, I really enjoyed this.
It's a candidate for the future TRL.
Yes.
John, do you have anything non-mean to say about Dave House?
I don't hate Dave. I listen, he's my bag. I don't hate him. Wasn't he in Painted Black, Dave House? Yeah.
So no, sorry. The Loved Ones.
Oh, Loved Ones. Who was in Painted Black?
Are you talking about Dr. Dan Yemens?
Well, no, I thought Dave Howes was in like the early version of Painted Black, but maybe I'm wrong.
I'm not aware. I mean, he was in the latest version of The Falcon with Brendan Kelly, but
Yeah, I think John is right. I think he was in like a really early incarnation of
Indeed he was. He was 2002-2004 and he was on the demo tape and CBA, and I have the demo tape and it is excellent. So I like Dave Howes simply because of that.
There you go. All right, so do we have anything else we want to talk about this week? Do we have one more here?
One more. Listen, it's the end of the road, 2.5 year journey. I don't know if people still want to hear about this or not, so I'll mention it one last time. The journey is over. The cycle is complete. The orbit begins anew, such as the Phoenix rises from the ashes, such as Kali eats Brahmin, such as the world snake chews on its own tail, such as John returns replacement records to the record store because they're boring. The journey is now complete. The cycle cannot be broken. The circle cannot be broken. We have finally released, after 2.5 years, The Flames. The Flames record is a record that I found in Jupiter Records in the discount bin 2.5 years ago. It had songs like Stabbed to Death, Contaminated, You Always Survive. I bought it. I took it home. I loved it. I thought it was great. No information about it online. However, there was a telephone number on the back. We called the telephone number. 6 weeks later, I get an email. Turns out the main guy moved far away, but the number I called was his sister's old number that still worked, and she sent him to me. We talked to him. We actually premiered the record in its early version about 1.5 years ago on Punk News. I said to him, let's remaster it. Let's put it out. He said, that's awesome. Can we put on some bonus tracks? I said, let's do it, Michael. We put on 2 cassette rehearsals from 1980 and 10 songs that he wrote from 2009 to 2013 for his wife. He's thrilled. I'm thrilled. This is what punk rock to me is all about. Wacky, fun things in the name of art. And this is out. And I don't know what else I can say. I think you should check out The Flames. I think they're awesome. I'm so happy this is out. And I guess I feel a little melancholy. The adventure has come to an end, Adam and Sam. The adventure has come to an end.
It's probably not at the end right now. You still have to pack 1 million orders, right?
I do have to pack a number of orders, yes.
Yes. So it's not done.
Well, it's not. I mean, honestly, the question I have is, how much do I stay in contact with Michael? Do I email him once a month, every 6 months? You know, I mean, the question being is like, is he sick of me or does he want to keep talking about The Flames? You know?
Well, I think that's up to you.
You send him a turkey every Thanksgiving and that's, you just move on.
So you're saying forget him. I actually would like to stay in contact with him, with our various he's not a punk guy at all. He's actually more of a rock guy from before punk. So he doesn't quite – he's not quite aware of the wacky things that happen in punk rock or why we do certain things in punk rock. I would like to keep him involved in punk news to some degree as much as he would like. But I just don't know in what context. You know, it's not like there's another album we can release. This is the only one. You know, and this is the last music he recorded before having a nervous breakdown, essentially moving away, which is interesting, you know. So,
John, you have to make yourself a fun adventure, and you know,
honest. Well, I mean, listen, man, I've been running on all cylinders between this, the Summer Soiree mixtape number 2. I might be cooling off on the adventure. I mean, we're definitely going to do Punk News mixtape number 3, definitely. But I don't know. Maybe I'll just chill back on some of the adventures lately because I've been running at all cylinders and I just haven't had like any free time, which is cool because honestly, I'd rather do cool projects than have free time, if you will. But on the other hand, I mean, I've been running at on all seams. You know what I mean? And plus, you can't force it. It's got to be natural. You know what I mean? You can't just start an adventure. It just kind of has to crop up, you know?
John, it's taking every bit of me to not engage you on your dumb replacements opinion that you've been voicing online and you snuck in here. So, do you want to play a song before we wrap things up?
I do. Let's play a song by The Flames. The album is out now via Norma Records in cooperation with Punk News. It's a fantastic record. You can buy it at normarecords.com. You guys want to hear Stabbed to Death, which is about getting stabbed to death. You Always Survive, which is a reggae song about getting beat up by the police and surviving, or do you guys want to hear Contaminated, which is about balancing one's life and work schedule with the desire to create art?
Let's do the last one.
All right, this is Contaminated by The Flames, off The Flames' now-released album after a 37-year delay, remastered by Bob Vilma. This is The Flames doing their hit single, Contaminated.
I don't wanna be contaminated, but working on this job, you get contaminated. I got to be strong, yeah, I got to be free to keep contamination from getting to me. I don't wanna see no solution, but working on this job, it is the final solution. I got to be strong, yeah, I got to be free to keep the solution from getting to me. Oh no, I don't wanna be automatic, automatic, automatic life. So we work all day on assembly line. Oh, we have a lot of fun doing it all day. And every 2 weeks the man he come and bring a pay. Oh boy, something to look forward to. Oh boy, oh, there's such a lot of work to do. Oh boy, when you're here 20 years, you get a few weeks solid days and stay over me too. Oh, won't it be contaminated, but living in this world, oh, you get contaminated. I got to be strong, yeah, I got to be free to keep contamination from getting into me. I don't wanna be working on this lousy job. I don't wanna be living like this anymore. I don't wanna be contaminated and frustrated. 3 weeks holidays just won't do. I don't wanna be contaminated. Oh no, I don't wanna be contaminated. 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 Oh no, contaminated. Contaminated. Contaminated.
And we're back, and Adam White's banning me because I've been banging on The Replacements for the past week and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to engage you with it because you're wrong. It's a weird hill that you've decided to go die on. That's all. You're like, what can I fight people about? I don't have a fight right now. You're not going to fight people about The Replacements and challenge their worth.
People love The Replacements.
Holy God, because they're incredible, John. God. Oh, anyways, I'm going to see you in a week and just pop you right in the nose.
Won't you be surprised when you see I have 3 Replacement records?
I'm going to be like, won't you be surprised when you see I have no nose? all right. So, yeah, I don't know.
Let's end that right there. That's perfect.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.